No fear, no fear, no fear here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, coming to you from somewhere near Spavinaw, Oklahoma, Oklahoma, Oklahoma. And we're hanging out. We're after Midfest. Donna and I went and spent time there. We may talk about that a little bit this evening with James Corbett, CorbettReport.com. And but the main thing that I wanted to do is I wanted to get about Hamas out of the way. You know, there's a lot of things I want to talk about, but I really think that if we do the Hamas thing, I think we'd all get caught up to speed of what is coming and how it's used as a tool for what's coming. So would you, James Corbett, go ahead and give us your, now that article, that was from before, a while ago before, and then did you add to it or anything, or is this a new one?
It's a new one. I haven't written that before.
I went and I go and I go, oh, it's an article. I'm going to have to actually read it. It's not a video. You know, I was like, oh my God. No. You know, but then I thought, I remember you did one on the Middle East. Oh, it was ISIS or.
I've talked about ISIS before. I've obviously talked about Al-Qaeda. I've done the secret history of Al-Qaeda.
That's what I was
thinking. This is the secret history of Hamas, right?
That's what I was thinking of. Yeah. So this one, I got through it, and I'm just going, you know, we knew this, but I didn't know the details of it and how documented and, you know, stipulated things were. Would you share that with us, please?
Okay, you want the long story short, it's Al-Qaeda, it's Hamasad, I guess you could say, is the long story short on this, right? But if you do want the details, I would suggest you read through it. And the details are important. And I'm not expecting any sympathy or anything, but I did a lot of research for this article.
If you're excited about that, I wanted to talk about, and we'll get into some of the other stuff, but if you're excited to talk about that, let's do it, man. You know, let's do it.
Well, I read an entire book for just this article.
All right. I'm sorry, man. I'm sorry. There are so many other things. I just knew we'd get sucked down that rabbit hole, and I'm going, if you want to go down that rabbit hole, let's rock and roll. All right.
Well, okay. Hamas, you know what's interesting to me about this, really, is the kind of we've got to pull back from the easy pat narratives that we get, even in the independent media, because the established media obviously has the easy pat narrative. This is a bunch of terrorists, and that means that everybody in Gaza is a terrorist, including all of those children who weren't even born when the last selection actually happened there. You know, blah, blah, blah. We know how that story goes. But then the story in the independent media becomes equally as watered down and silly and black and white, in which... Essentially, I think the standard received wisdom, and I definitely go into this in the article and document it. I mean, it's not that it's not true, but the standard received wisdom is that Hamas is created, is completely a creature of, or at least propped up by Israel. And I think you could definitely argue that second point, which is what I demonstrate in the article. The first point, that it's entirely a creation of Israel and is completely fictitious, I think is as wrong-headed as the idea that Al-Qaeda is completely fictitious, a creation of the CIA, Mossad, and what have you. I don't think that's real, because ultimately what ends up happening there is people start basically downplaying the idea that there are Islamic extremists of any sort, that there are people who would die and kill and suicide bomb and whatever else for their cause. No, those people exist, and they really do believe they're doing what they're doing. My point is, they are only really, truly successful. I mean, you get an occasional attack here and there that may in fact be a spontaneous attack, but the really successful operations like a 9/11, like a 10/7, those only happen because they are allowed to happen, because they are fostered, and they ultimately support the great Satan that these dupes and useful idiots think that they are striking against. And I think we have to keep that in mind, because I'm not here to valorize Hamas or say it's some wonderful thing. It's actually a much more complex thing, in which there is a military wing that freedom fighter, terrorist, whatever, however you look at it, they are definitely part of an armed resistance struggle. But there is also now, at least at this point, there is a political wing, and they are the default governing party there. Structure in Gaza. So anything that's related to any sort of government service is Hamas. That doesn't mean that every person, you know, every street sweeper or what have you in Gaza is is part of their, I'll no, cast some no, fighting
no,
degrees.
No, 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 that's, you know, and I don't think that's the impression a lot of people get. You know, my thing is that it's, it reminds me of a line in Spartacus where Laurence Olivier character goes, you know, if Rome didn't exist, we would dream of her, you know? And I'm going, if Hamas didn't, the IDF is going, if Hamas didn't exist, we would dream of her, you know? So I don't think.
In fact, that's the exact quote I had in the Secret History of Al-Qaeda documentary with, God, I always forget his name. He was a CIA station chief in Kabul in the 80s. And he was talking about Osama bin Laden. And he said, if Osama, it's almost as if Osama bin Laden didn't exist, we would have to create him.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, just out of context, I mean, obviously he put it in a different context. And he wasn't saying that the CIA literally.
No, I have complete understanding. You get old enough, you just see the pattern.
you know what he means by that. And it's very true. Of course, Netanyahu and the Likudniks and the extremist Zionists in the Israeli government need Hamas. And that's explicitly, in fact, we don't have to even speculate. It has been reported in Jerusalem Post and elsewhere in 2019 in a cabinet meeting. Netanyahu said to his cabinet, if you want to get rid of Palestine, you have to support Hamas because they're going to keep it divided between the West Bank, Palestinian Authority, and the Hamas in Gaza. And they're going to be fighting with themselves and they're going to be the extremists. And the world opinion will be on our side because of this crazy things they do. Yes, they need that. But on the other side of it, let's not be unreal about this. The demagogues on the other side of this need the crazies in the Israeli government in order to justify their own oppression of their own people.
Yeah, hey, see, we here, need to rule you. That's when we start getting down to it, okay? Whose interest is being best served with all this? You know, where's the gain, you know? Where's a little something-something for the investment? And I'm looking at, and it doesn't really make any sense until you start to realize, one, they're just messed up in the head, you know? I mean, they're not the same kind of human beings. They're gravitated towards this kind of power. You know, they're gravitated to have this kind of control. This is what they seek. This is their goal. And they band together to do this. It's like a personality trait, you know, and I'm going, and I don't think it's really religion. I don't think it's a country. I don't think it's, I think it's just a gathering of the herd or the flock or the, you know, the demons or the whatever the hell, you know, that have come together and are doing this. That's what I'm much more interested in. All this stuff is a side effect of it. Once we start to realize it doesn't matter, you know, whatever evil lurks in the hearts of men and doing it's controlled by the evil lord of something, you know, it's a philosophy thing. And we have the technology now to kind of identify it, you know, and I don't know, all congressmen got to go through the scanner or something. I mean, damn, it's bad.
Well, let's put it in a context that the American listeners will be able to understand. Just think of it as an American war for independence. And in that war for independence, of course, you have the freedom fighters who, of course, were seen as terrorists by the Brits. But within that freedom fighter, terrorist, whatever way you frame the war for independence, you had different people coming at it from different perspectives for different reasons. So you had the Thomas Jeffersons and the Thomas Paines and the people fighting presumably for some version of human freedom, but maybe they were also lining their own pockets, but, you know, blah, blah, blah. But then you also had the Federalists, the Alexander Hamiltons and those people who wanted to, okay, now that we've smashed that up and we've gotten rid of the British crown, now we need an American crown and we need to create this system of control so that we can control our people. And so I think you have the same dynamic going on in any movement. So there are the people who want to steward over the resistance movement so that they can essentially be on top of the dog pile.
Yeah, and that's a special kind of person. That's what I've really been focusing while I was here at MidFest. You know, I did a lot of interviews. I didn't really get to, you know, hang that much. I did probably 8, 9. I mean, because the people were so interesting. And, you know, that's, you know, hours a day. And it was almost always the same answer. They just wanted the truth.
Yeah.
You know, and that's why you're providing context on this Hamas thing, you know, it's, but where is it that we need to be aware? Is it aware that, well, they're not autonomous really, and they are influenced by money, and you got Iran and the IDF and their little backdoor deals of money of serves some congressional campaign's interest of who gives a crap. But the thing is that it is a understanding that we need of what? That you're always going to have these and you shouldn't align yourself with foreign entanglements, that you shouldn't, you know, believe everything the media says. Not everybody's all bad or all good. Everybody, I mean, what do we bring out of this that's above the normal discussion, you know, kind of root of all evil?
Well, one thing that I would say is I'm not going to sit here and tell Palestinians what they should be thinking or feeling any more than I would be telling Israelis what they should be thinking or feeling. I just want people to know the dynamic of what's going on so that they can make a better informed decision about that. But yeah, whether people think that then killing and violence and destruction is going to be the answer to these problems, I guess is going to be up to them. I tend to think that's not going to fundamentally solve anything. But hey, easy for me to say. I'm the beneficiary of such things as the American War for Independence, which was all about violence.
No, I'm not even talking about trying to influence or tell them what to do. They're going to do what they're going to do. But, you know, what we learn from it. I mean, I'm just like, are we learning the media is always lying? We learned that the U.S. empire always sucks.
The point is the same point that we are always making, which is that it is always a small group of oligarchs that want control over the population, and they will use any means to do so. And I think it's in everyone's best interest to understand that dynamic and understand, even for the Palestinians, okay, great, let's say you win your state, and let's say you get, you know, from the river to the sea, and you get all of occupied Palestine back. You're still going to be stewarded over by the same clique of people who are going to have power over you if you're going to participate in some voting system or whatever it is that they're going to institute there. And is that really, I mean, is that fundamental freedom? It may be relative freedom. And hey, it's better not to be being bombarded and killed and ethnically genocided. Sure, I understand that completely. But the question is what you're left with on the other side.
And what are we left with?
I would tend to say the same thing as we're always left with, which is people being deluded into believing that they need leaders to tell them what to do. And until we solve that problem, we're not going to solve the fundamental problems with humanity. And that's why, at the very, very, very least, I do appreciate what the American War for Independence was in its rhetoric and the way that it was sold to the public and the way it's placed in the public imagination. Of course, it wasn't just that. But hey, at least they had the right idea and language, and they were appealing to the right concept of the Declaration of Independence.
That is the power. You know, it's the narrative. It's a story. What was the promise? They promised me, it's just piece of paper. I go, they promised me. You know, them lying sacks of snot. So I'm just like, you know, either they broke the promise or you guys did. I mean, you know, what was the deal? So it's just, it's the narrative. You know, I even see it more after this week. We have, you know, we built up a bunch of shows that we put up, and now I can, you know, get some stuff, other stuff done and traveling and so on. And, you know, the break from, we're still doing the news and we have responsibilities for the site and stuff, but it was, I was busy doing interviews and so Donna was taking care of stuff. So I broke away from everything. And then you come back in spurts, check out Freedom's Phoenix. You're like, damn. I mean, you can't look away for a second, you know? And it's just, but the answer is always the same for me, you know? Don't be dependent on this stuff, man. Get outside, understand. Yeah. But should I expect that it's going to get fixed on its own? Should I expect that I can come out from, you know, under the rock, you know, in a few years and go, you know, all right, well, we're back on the mend. You know, should I, or is it 1,000 years of darkness if we lose the foothold of people understanding what's up in your context?
What do you think? What's your take?
I think that humans keep on keeping on. It just gets really messy, you know, and the messes can last a long time or a short time or whatever. And technology, it seems like it evolves faster, but then the robot armies we didn't have AI chasing us like a cheetah all the time. So, you know, how the hell do I know, you know? But I have faith in humanity. I think abundance is right there, and they're going to try and control the abundance in your sheep, you know?
Yeah.
And what happens when it's decentralized to bite me? And then there's going to be the people that are predisposed to be, you know, in their cafe and they live in their coffin, but they got great social spaces, you know, they're bees. I mean, you know, peace.
Yeah.
And then those that are not. So I just want the freedom to be left alone. And
that would be nice, wouldn't it?
Well, it's when you do things like Hamas, are they appealing? Like you say, they go through all of this trillions of dollars in time and so on to convince us. At least we were convinced with the rhetoric of the founders. You know, it's kind of, well, that's a thing. Okay. Yeah. That's a thing. At least promise me that. Right. They never do it, but they promise it. Okay. When they stop even
promising. So the question is, what's their rhetoric, right? And I do link up in the document, I link up their 1988 charter, which isn't an official document, and maybe they've repudiated and blah, blah, blah. But back then, at any rate, they were talking about the fundamental part of this is it's an Islamic revolution to establish an Islamic caliphate or an Islamic state. So that's what they're aiming at, specifically. It's going to be Sharia law, it's going to be Islamic state, and we're all going to be worshiping Allah. So there you go. Is that human freedom?
I just want the individual to be able to choose for themselves. You know, right? Anything that doesn't advocate for that, they're like the enemy. Yeah. It's kind of like Thomas Jefferson's memorial.
But I don't think that is part of Islamic law. I don't think you can choose for yourself, guys.
Yeah. I saw you made that point. You know, this is, it's kind of a interesting time for me right now that we've got our land. We're just, making the deal on the tractor and all the stuff and everything. We get back, within a few weeks, I'm, Green Acres is the plate, that kind of thing. And then, and we get going, grandkids come out. And I'm wondering, the whole goal is to try and insulate from this stuff. And the best I think I can do is by inspiration or example, Mark. But then if you start marketing it and then you become a target, they want to, yada, 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 yada. Yeah. And the choice really left is, do you abandon the battle or do you engage again? You know what I mean? I don't see abandoning it. I'm just trying to think of the most creative way to get them. And I saw you did a piece on lawsuit, challenging the man tyranny with lawsuits. Talk about that a little bit.
All right. So part of my Solutions Watch exploration of different ideas, I threw out on the table the idea of lawsuits. And specifically, this was because last month I saw an article about a group of people who were suing the National Park Service because they had been denied the ability to pay entry fee to whichever park it was, but with cash. And their lawsuit is saying, well, as last time I checked, the legal tender law was that this currency is supposed to be acceptable for any debt, right? So why can't we use this? So they're taking the National Park Service to court, or they're taking, are they suing the state, or how does that work? Anyway, they're suing someone about this. And so once I saw that particular article, it's one of those things where pattern recognition or whatever it is, I started seeing that everywhere. Oh, this lawsuit, this lawsuit, this lawsuit, this lawsuit. So I just decided to throw it out there on the table for my community to have a discussion. Do you guys think this is a way forward? I understand that 99.9% of my audience is going to be immediately cynical about this as a potential idea, because it's a bought and paid for controlled court system in which you're invoking state force to come in and enforce these rules that they make up themselves and blah, blah, blah. I get it. But the whole, this is the point of Solutions Watch that I think continually gets lost and makes me wonder if it's worth doing it at all, is the point of Solutions Watch isn't, hey guys, here's this thing that will completely change and wonderfully transform the world for the better overnight, and here it is, and if it doesn't work, then everything's, no, my whole point of Solutions Watch is, here's all these buttons, and there's a million of them, and you get to choose what buttons you're going to push, and they might do something that improves your life just a little bit. And is that worth pushing that button, even knowing that that button exists? Or is it just, no, not until there's a perfect solution for everything? So anyway, the response that I've received so far is overwhelmingly, this is stupid. Don't, it's a waste of time. It's not going to do anything.
I have an opinion. I saw, it was just a couple of days ago, they had some Brazilian, ICW, whatever, the fighters in the rings, they try really kick the crap out of each other. Whatever it is. So Joe Rogan is doing the after bout interview, and he goes up to this guy from Brazil, and he goes, "Read Ludwig von Mises, MFers." I mean, he's just going. So my point is that when it penetrates society, when it's general public opinion, when people start seeing, you know, culturally and, you know, and icons and people, it just ideas start to surface, slogans, you know, different attitudes, that kind of thing. That's what you're really going for. Okay. And I've had over a dozen lawsuits. I've been argued before the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals as my own attorney. I've been through, I meat grinding Arizona Supreme Court three times. I mean, you know, I get it. And every single benefit from them came because you got a government number. Because the government number is a starting pistol for the media and these guys to, you know, write about it, you know? So they write about it, it's discussed in the legislature, people take sides in the media or something. Well, which they're trying to control, and then it became alt media. And so these things get attention. But even better is it very clearly well defines the issue. And some attorneys and efforts go for, you know, the headline, you know, Trump bad, so we're suing him because he, you know, whatever, you know. So, but some of them are very informative and they're on a specific issue. Some some government inaction, some
even informing people what the law actually is.
Make them say it. Make them make you make them say it. You know, and the lawsuits is my make them say it. So it has, in the long run, because I've been doing this for a while, you know, almost 40 years. And in the long run, what happens is that you see the shift in attitudes based on the information that people received. This is why I'm so supportive of Corbett and his videos and his context. Because if you don't have the context, you have to learn context over decades. If you know the context already going in by watching, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8, 20, whatever, of, you know, James's best videos, then you have the context and you can see it. You know, and you can make decisions, informed, up-to-date decisions on what's going to be the biggest
truth
mile
isn't
marker
about
in this history.
Truth isn't a set of factual statements. It's a set of factual statements arranged in a way that makes sense of the world. And that is the context. So you can have factual statements reported by the establishment media, but there are factual statements here and there and here and there, and they never put it together in a way that actually explains what's happening. I would say that the other important part of that Solutions Watch that we're talking about, suing the tyrants, is what I got towards the end of the video, where I'm talking about, rather than suing the state or the governments, using notice of liability as a specific legal instrument to put on blast specific individuals, saying, no, if you come after me, even if you are wearing whatever funny hat you're wearing or whatever badge, you personally, Joe Smith, you're going to be responsible for the harm that is done on this, which I think is probably potentially an effective method for getting particular people to back off in particular circumstances, which again is not some great victory for all time, but could presumably be used.
I've seen it done. I try and get away from individuals because they really rally around their made men and women. I mean, you know, but if it's an issue thing and it's a, you're going after the shiny badge or the position or something like that, but then a lot of times you have to.
When you make it personal, that's when it becomes dangerous.
You wind up Hillary'd and stuff, you know, that kind of thing. And here it was McCain. I mean, it was just, you know, a thing. So if you go after people, generally, they always claim sovereign immunity. And then you got to battle that, you know. So if you name them individually, that's the first thing. You got to be ready for that. So oftentimes, it's if the goal was sovereign immunity, okay, which is what you really have to attack. So if I was to do it, you know, I'd be going after, get a really good case, and that you knew they were going to claim sovereign immunity, and be ready to argue that, you know, so that they aren't held not liable for anything ever. You got to really get them in, acting out of a color authority of law, that they knew they were out doing something, and they get stripped of that immunity, and you go after them. But it's a, but as long as they're the club, then they can do club you any way they want.
But also, not even in the context of suing people in particular, but using notice of liability as a way of saying that, you know, you, if you are the doctor that's going to deliver me this shot, you're just sign this document that shows that you are on the record saying that you agree that this is this is a safe method and you've looked into all of the defects of this shot and you're going to sign this piece of paper, right? Putting them on notice that they are going to be legally responsible for what happens.
Well, the pressure's off me now because there's people doing it here right now. Mickey Kahn, I think it is. They're really going after this liability thing for individuals and stripping this. So I'm looking forward to see where that goes. I'm thinking that there's a bigger solution in being out of their control. You know, if you're not, they want you in control. And if you're out of control, then you're out of control. And I think that's the goal.
Yep. Well, agreed. And it raises other points, as some people in the comments were bringing up. There was a self-professed voluntarist who was talking in the comments about how using the judicial system is against voluntarism and anarchist principles. But I'm wondering, so you think an anarchist world is one in which there's no courts, no judges? Really? I think there would be, in fact. I think common law would be actually, of course, everything would be adjudicated, but it would be adjudicated on principles of voluntary participation.
Yeah, no, I'm with you there, but I that doesn't mean I support what this crap is now, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Of course, it's the state justice system, right? Yeah.
This, you know, I'm glad you're starting to really think harder about this stuff, you know, that you're starting to become an activist, James, and I can feel it, you know? You're kind of, you know, wanting some action. What do you think would be James's version? If everybody gave me 5 minutes and $5 of their time and we'd go whip ass doing something, is it be in the center of decentralized ideas or what?
Yeah. No, my whole raison d'etre, my whole existence is geared towards human freedom and whatever makes that possible. But as part of that, I can't perform the performative contradiction of telling people what they should or shouldn't be doing. The entire point of freedom is your ability to decide for yourself in your own circumstances what works for you and what doesn't, and having the ability to do that so long as you're not infringing on other people. That is the universal principle. If I had my 5-minute speech to make, it would be garnered towards that, and I wouldn't be telling anyone what to do or what not to do with their lives.
As people start to embrace that and they start to, you know, own their own freedom and their ability to, you're free to, like, move their hand. They're not encumbered. I mean, they can do it. You might not be at liberty to do it, you know, but hey, you can do it. And to get them to get off their butt and actually do it, is that a psychological thing, a physical thing, a practical thing, or something that, you know, changes people to want to change a little bit? You know, to do something road.
It's exactly. It is such a mindset thing, isn't it? It's all about your mindset. And the interesting thing is we tend to think that we set our mindset or something along those lines. We are in control of what we think and what we believe and the way that we're oriented. But that's not necessarily, at least not the entire story. And there may be something to it. You hear about these studies and things that are done on people that where they are able to because of, you know, wire implants in someone's brain, they're able to make them move their arm or something. And when you ask someone who is doing this, like, oh, why did you move your arm? They will come up with the justification after the fact. Oh, I was feeling uncomfortable, so I decided to move my arm. No, we made you move your arm. And I think there may be something to that, in that if people actually just practiced the act of declaring and living their freedom, even if they didn't believe it, at a certain point they start creating that narrative in their head.
Make it till you make it.
And I think the action is actually it, maybe the cause, but certainly the more important part of the equation, rather than intellectualizing it.
I am encouraged by just crazy things, off the wall things that you wouldn't think, you know, would, you know, be, you know, that big a deal to me. And it was, you know, here at MidFest, it's the springtime. They do it in October when the leaves start to go, so it's cool and crisp, and you're starting to see the colors. Then in the spring, it's green, it's coming, and freaking pollen everywhere, man, kicking my butt. So then you know, we got to get some honey of this, whatever. So Donna gets this. I want to do a commercial for Hilltop Garden, whatever the heck, honey. This stuff is honey, like maple syrup and butter. It is just the most amazing. I want to endorse. I want to buy into. I want. And the thing is that to have the where you have a local supply of something that you use on a regular basis that you would enjoy, be proud of. Maybe it trades, you know, in other communities, that kind of thing. You want to encourage that. Because this is what you want to be attached to, something like this. Yeah, you know I mean, this is my favorite. Oh my God, this is going to make me look good, you know? Or, and of course, it'll benefit them or something. That's the free market. That's the future. That's the abundance that I'm thinking of. That's what's coming. Yeah. Then we went to a ranch. It was just a few miles away. A couple of the guys were there, and I interviewed one of them. It was a guy on Twitter, a, you know, finance college guy, Wall Street, where the heck he was, and he on Twitter, and he goes, you know, we could buy shares in the cows and whatever and get land and kind of poof, it's a couple years later, and for the last year, they've been on 700 acres, got like 300 cows, and people out there volunteering and part of their shares and working and making food supply so people don't go hungry. And the one thing that I got from him talking to him is he was more about the responsibility we have to others, you know, as a kind of a biblical or Christian thing. Yeah. It's that, you know, think you're just going to go out and be, even if you got your own community or whatever, it was, to him, he made a persuading case for the benefit to yourself and humanity as a species, as being the social creatures that we are, that you accommodate a little bit of sacrifice to, you know, help your brother along kind of thing. And it was a very powerful message, and he did a really good job at it. And I'm going to be checking back with these guys and, you know, see how they're doing and so on. But I'm seeing this shift. And I don't know how it goes in Japan. You know, America, is that kind of the bellwether for the world? Is it Europe? Is it Asia? Does Japan kind of just, you know, muddle along and not influenced? Or how do you get a bead on what's changing worldwide other than the headlines?
Good question. Before I answer that, let me just tag on to what you're saying there about this being oriented towards service to others. That is actually a more important part of this equation than a lot of people would realize. Maybe people don't know this, but clinically speaking, there is no distinguishable actual internal psychological difference between thinking and concentrating on yourself and depression. Those are indistinguishable states because people who are thinking about themselves find themselves in depression. People who are oriented towards others are happier and more productive and less likely to be in a state of depression, etc. So that again, even if you're only thinking about your own self-interest, it's in your self-interest to be in other people's interest. And that is the beauty of the free market. It compels people to be of service to others. Again, even if only for your own sake, for the sake of yourself and your family, you need to be of use to other people. And that's a wonderful, great thing for society, isn't it? And so we need to be oriented more towards celebrating what is good. Hey, you know, there's this local mom and pop that you're creating this wonderful honey. There's, you know, there's this thing in my local community. Hey, I think this is great. We should be more about celebrating things that are good and working towards building up things that are good, rather than denouncing things that are bad and working to destroy the things that are bad. That is the wrong orientation altogether. Having said that,
honey syrup butter. Imagine that. I mean, come on.
I'm trying.
Honey, I go, what is this? It's like when you put a bunch of butter on a waffle and then get some good maple syrup and you put, you know, it's kind of, it's like, wow. So it just excited me. When you know, I experienced that, when Donna went and got this, I'm like, oh my goodness.
Yeah.
It was because it was representative of what we're missing. You know, we're missing that craftsmanship. And I remember I had Gerald Celente on years ago. He was just, he hammers on this all the time. Back then, that's when he started, man. He was going for it. It's going to be local. It's going to be quality. It's going to be wooden toys, you know, carved out for the little kids. I mean, it's going to be whatever. And I don't think he was advocating that, you know, you have to do it. I think it's going to happen. You know, here it comes. And I can see it, and I think it's a good sign. It means we're going to be okay. But a lot of people aren't. What's our responsibility to them, James?
Our responsibility is to make our community and surroundings as good as we can make it. And that again will boil down to every single person is going to have their own ability to do that in their own ways, given whatever talents and skills that they have. The real question then becomes, how do we foster the right types of skills? And because, I mean, trades and skills and physical learning how to carve a wooden toy, etc., is not, generally speaking, something that's encouraged in our modern society, but maybe it should be. And on that note, I'm sure you've seen the stories saying that Gen Z is apparently taking up trades at much higher percentages and ratios than in previous generations. And that makes perfect sense, doesn't it? Are you going to put yourself into hundreds of thousands of dollars of debt to go to some state indoctrination camp in order to get a fancy degree that will entitle you to flip burgers, or until the robots replace you? Or will you learn an actual valuable skill in trade and apprentice on the job and then get more money and actually have a useful skill? It seems like a no-brainer. And that's why I think we need to be orienting people towards the things that can actually be useful and implemented in a healthy, thriving society, rather than just baking ourselves into cogs in the wheel, because we are going to be replaceable cogs in the very near future if we keep going down that path.
And miring in the negative, you know, I remember Will Grigg, you know, he had spoken at our Freedom Summits. You know, he's was a great writer, but he was always so negative. I mean, it was like the police state MFers need to die, you know, and it was, and he got kicked out of the John Birch, New American he used to write for or something. And then he started, they started the Libertarian Institute with Scott Horton. And, and he's been to my home. I really like the guy, big family he took care of. And, but I just think when he died of natural causes. But when he died, you know, was it, did he have regret? Was he satisfied? Did he think he fought the good fight? He did the right thing by, you know, showing these guys for what they were, the BATF and the federal government and the FBI and Department of Justice. I mean, he just hammered on them, accurate as hell, which is why they didn't like him, you know. But the, I don't know if I would feel good about my end as, what light did I shed? And I know a lot of people thought his stuff was really popular. I mean, he was a really popular writer. And I asked him, could he write me a positive story to put in the magazine? And he goes, no, I can't, you know? And I was going, that was kind of sad to me, you know, for some reason. I just...
Honestly, I hear you. In fact, you know, it's funny. I was just thinking about this today, and I don't even know why, but I was thinking about Alan Watt. Do you remember Alan Watt? Not Alan Watts. Alan Watt. He was a Canadian, well, Scott, but he was living in Canada, who did a broadcast on RBN, I think, a decade ago or so, called Cutting Through the Matrix. And I remember when I was first getting into independent media and stuff, I was listening to Alex Jones, I was listening to Alan Watt, people like that. And I remember at a certain point, and this wasn't very far in, like maybe a year or so of listening to Alan Watt, I came to the conscious realization, oh, this guy only ever talks about the worst possible aspect of everything, that this is an agenda that's been going on since long before you were born. It'll continue long after you die. You can't change any of it. You can't talk to the normies about this, because they'll just come after you. So you just have to smile politely and talk about the weather and then go home with your private thoughts. And that was his message, ultimately, at the end of the day, every time. And at a certain point, I thought, why am I even listening to this? What is the point of this? This is just horribly depressing and absolutely not empowering in any way, shape, or form. So I stopped listening to him. And I think that is my mindset. If I truly, at the bottom of my soul, believed there's nothing you can do, it's all foreordained, I wouldn't be here doing this right now. I wouldn't be talking to you. I don't know why anyone would listen to me if that was my message. What would be the point of that? So yeah, I hear you very, very much on that. If people don't have some positive message that they can put forward, I think there's no point in investing your time in that.
It's going to be hard to inspire generation next with that. And I think that's what's happened. You know, they've been scared to death of every freaking thing under the sun, you know, including the sun. And then just, it's amazing that we have as much toxic masculinity as we got. And I'm seeing it's going to be a marketing thing. It's going to be cool again. It's going to be, okay, we didn't need to have the jock rule the school when all these computer nerds were coming up and really they were ruling the planet, you know. But, you know, can we have, you know, some guys that can lay some brick? I mean, can you teach your son what a hammer is? I mean, can you? I mean, to be productive and able to defend for yourself when you don't have everything done for you by Rosie the Robot, which is common, you know, my God, I don't know what we're going to do with that. What do you think that, how's that going to affect potential society? Is it, I mean, in the long run, humanity always thrives because it does, hopefully. But with this AI robot thing, man, what do you think?
Well, this is where I am potentially blackpilled on some of this sort of stuff, because as I've always said, and I continue to say, as long as the human spirit survives and thrives, humanity will prevail in the end. And whatever dark times we go through, free humanity always reemerges. It's like the beach ball, you can't push it down. And if you do, it'll pop back up. Unless and until humanity, that fundamental dynamic changes. And I think we are heading into the technological space where the Matrix or something like it is on its way. And what do you do at that point? That really does change the game. And I know that people like to poo-poo the AI and automation and robots and all this. They talked about that sort of stuff. You know, like they'll put the horse and buggy makers out of business, but that just means you got a car industry.
No, everything's different.
This is different. And I honestly feel this because I am sitting here with my daughter and my son every single day. I don't think there's a day that goes by I don't get to say something about, you want to be a truck driver when you grow up, son? Yeah, that sounds great. Well, I don't think there will be truck drivers when you grow up. I mean, there's very, very little that I can think of where, don't worry, you'll be able to do that. No, probably the robots will do it.
Yeah, I'll be president. Can't be president someday.
I hope the robots will do that.
You know, I'm sure I told you this before. A friend of mine, you know, a listener and stuff, and we had a story. He did comment on one of the stories we had, and it said, you know, something like 80% of, you know, government workers can be replaced with robots. And he just right back and he goes, 100% of government jobs could be replaced with pictures of robots. And I thought that was, okay, that's a good way of looking at it. But I'm afraid that's what's going to happen. You know, there's going to be the robot in there and it's going to have its official, you know, this is the answer to whatever. And, don't call again.
They've already created the AI religion where they're literally worshiping the AI godhead, and we haven't even seen anything.
They got a logo and everything?
Yeah, probably.
They need a savior. They got to kill some AI, you know?
Yeah. The dead and risen AI.
Right. You can't do it. It's blockchain. You can't stop it, you know? Yeah, it's, you know, it's really why I like talking to you, because it's of all the technical and the details and so on, I could throw up 50 gazillion stories, and it's just really always comes down to humanity. It always comes down to individual anarchical decisions that you make and what you perceive to be your own self-interest. Yep. And if we can learn through context and seeing facts and analyzing our situations and so on, and just talking to family and friends and having meet space and community, you know, and hug on them and, you know, swap auras. I mean, you know, whatever. Yeah, right. You can recognize this stuff and you have less need for government to be the source of the problems to begin with. So it's a person thing. It's a human thing. And I don't know how it's going to go, but it's going to have to be, I think, blood and steel and a bunch of dead humans. And I fear that. I don't want to have anything to do with it. I don't want to kill or be killed. But I don't want to be left alone. I'll put that in there, you know. But I'm thinking we're going to have to go through something. How likely do you think we got to go through something?
You know, what does that thing look like on this side and during and on the other side? Okay, here's the question. Did you ever read Dune? Not watch the movies, read the book.
Me?
Yeah.
I used to read a lot until I got, well, married. Well, after I started having kids, but it was mostly science fiction. Dune? I'm sorry.
Did you read Dune?
Yes, I did.
Okay, so I read that 25 years ago or something. It really left an impact on me at the time. It was a an interesting book, right? There's a lot of philosophy and sort of deeper themes.
I read it right when the movie came out. Well, or yeah, that's what caused me to
as in the David Lynch.
Yeah, the old one. So back in the day.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, he did his best, huh? Anyway. Okay,
so
it's an interesting book.
And
part of the lore of the book, which is interesting, I always thought it was just audacious to set a science fiction piece, not just a couple decades in the future, not just 100 years, but this is tens of thousands of years in the future. So how on earth is humanity going to evolve? And so part of the lore of this is that there are no thinking machines. There are no computers that are like computers that we have or anything that corresponds to that, specifically because in the lore of the Dune universe, they went through the Butlerian Jihad. Look it up, read the wiki fandom articles about this. The idea is that at some point the AI, whatever, robots were taking over humanity, and they eventually they had to fight some kind of big, you know, war against that, and instituted the rule, which has become almost like this religious maxim by the time we get to the Dune series, that you do not make computers or artificial intelligence in the mold of a human. There is no thinking. So they develop the Mentats who can, you know, do these incredible calculations in their head organically.
Lip or something, and they...
Yeah, right. And they've got
computers.
They use the spice melange to help them and blah, 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 whatever, right? But the point is that there is that understanding that even a calculator is a step on that path towards the inevitable takeover of humanity by the artificial intelligence, which of course isn't real intelligence. And we have to understand that. Yes, it is able to do calculations and to put information together in much more rapidly than any human ever could, even at this point, let alone, let's imagine 10, 20, 100, 1,000 years down the road. But the point is, intelligence is not that. In the exact same way that we just established that a set of facts is not the truth, the set of facts put together in a narrative that makes sense of the world is the truth. And that, until we get that past that distinction, which is, I think, part of that that wrong path that that humanity has taken the past few hundred years, the Enlightenment idea that it's all, oh, we've dispensed with all those old fairy tales and now we're perfectly rational and we have the scientific method and blah, blah, blah. And where does that lead us? It leads us to, you know, men can be women, women can be men and whatever, everything, black is white and white is black and everything is permissible and all of this nonsense, contradictory nonsense, because we have lost the fundamental compass of that overarching narrative that puts us in the context of who we are as humans and what this all means. And that is real intelligence, to understand the mythology and fairy tales and all of that, that people would dismiss in the Enlightenment mold, is actually an incredibly important part of that. And that's what will be excluded from the robot AI thinking machine takeover. And I think that's what Frank Herbert saw and he was gesturing towards and incorporated nicely. So I think ultimately we do need our Butlerian Jihad. How are we going to get there? What does that look like? How far down that road do we have to get before we start pushing back against it? And how many people have to die when that happens? That's the question.
Well, I didn't get far enough into the future because Dune was a bunch of, I just read the first one, you know? And it was a lot of this you're talking about came later, you know, as I remember, but
earlier, but yeah.
Oh, okay. But I'm not familiar with a lot of that.
In a different book. Yeah.
But the main thing that I'm seeing from, I got a lot of science fiction in me, you know, cause I enjoyed that more. It was like different ideas that Winder, you know, it's Heinlein, Hogan and, you know, and Asimov. And so, I mean, it was just, you know, expand your mind. And then, you know, and Neil Smith, you know, the one thing is how much of it has come true. The only thing is like transporters and we'll see, and warp drive, which we'll see, you know, replicators, you know, you might as well 3D printing. But
well, we got 3D printers now. We're getting towards
so, you know, it's been steps in that direction, you know, and it hadn't been fast enough for me. But the idea of abundance, that was one thing what, you know, robotics and AI and so on has brought. But they have to have a self-interest to give a crap whether it's abundance for you and abundance for them, you know?
Yeah.
And how close do you want them to get? You want them to have ambition? You know, I mean, I could get metastasized into God knows what. So, you know, it's, I'm to serve man. It's a cookbook. I mean, you know, I just, you know, so I fear it in that way, is that they're going to give it too much credit, too much control, too much, because I don't expect it to not act in its own self-interest. And if as it gets smarter, and if it sees us as a threat to that, and we treat people, them, as bad as we treat people, they're like, we're a freaking plague on the planet, and you need to all die. We're Terminator.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
So I see that as a legitimate threat.
Well, you know, this goes to some really fundamentally deep parts about the way we are oriented in the world. And another false assumption that has been made in enlightened rational thinking is that there is an objective outside reality that we perceive, and maybe we perceive it through our own subjective filters and what have you, but we are perceiving some aspect of that objective reality. But in reality, what I think the way that we properly orient ourselves is to understand that perception is itself and oriented through our motivations, our goals. The way we conceptualize the universe actually is the way that we perceive that universe. And so we tend to see things as utility, as this is the tool for doing this. This is an obstacle for this. And the question then is, what utility functions are built into the AI, programmed or whatever, spontaneously formed or what have you? And where do we come into that in this artificial intelligence's perception
useless,
of the universe?
Ugly bags are we, of water.
Exactly. Are we ends in ourselves, or are we means towards an end? And what end? Whose end? These are the fundamental questions, right? It isn't just about some rational scientific process that plays out in the realm of objective reality. There is no such thing. There is really only the subjective reality of what we are orienting ourselves towards. And who gets to decide what the computers are orienting themselves towards?
You know, one thing to keep in mind, I just thought of, you know, your Lord and Savior, Elon Musk, he has... When he put in the cameras in all of the cars to make them full self FSD, I guess that's what that stands for, full self driving. So full self driving. Oh, they kissed a curb, messed up my rim. I mean, they're all, you know, going on about that now. But the idea that you have all of the technology embedded already, and then you turn it on later. You know, everybody good, y'all got it. You know, it's all good. Well, it's free this month, turn it on, whatever. You do the same kind of thing when you get these androids in your home and all these billion robots out there just sitting there. And it's like iRobot, all of a sudden they download and boom. And you'd know there's going to be an update, add to, upgrade, customer service, kiss my butt, whatever thing. And it's going to be... to wear and hack the any safety, whatever, the whatever is whatever. And it's going to be, you know, things are going to happen. I anticipate that.
Yep.
And how are we going to deal with that? What's our goal?
I guess, really, in order to insulate ourselves from that, we have to be as detached from that technological infrastructure that's being woven around us. But even to the extent that we are able to insulate ourselves to that, and we are the people eating bugs and drinking rainwater out in the forest that you can't touch me, ha ha ha, we're still surrounded in a web of people who are embedded in this technology and who will be subject to whatever upgrades that come along the wires. And that's another thing that, you know, keeps me up at night at times, is thinking about the, as you say, when you're watching a broadcast of Hillary Clinton and you start thinking, hey, you know, actually maybe she's got a point. You know, what kind of...
She's so hot right now.
Who knows? Brain manipulation technologies and other things will be on the horizon. All I know is we won't know about it till it's already being used on us.
Yes. That's right? It. We won't know until it's too freaking late, you know? So you better do good now. You know, it's just... Yeah, you know, I know you got to go, but, you know, this has been... You know, to be more enlightening for me today... You can answer me a couple of questions before you go. Got a couple of minutes.
I'll do my best.
Do you think toxic masculinity, one, is on its way back? Is that going to be a marketing thing? Are they going to yin and yang? It's like a yo-yo going back and forth. How long before you think, I'm pretty sure that's coming, but I mean, how long do you think before they're going to, you know, masculine everybody up and go join the army or something?
Yep. How long? I can't say, but it, I could definitely see that that is the obvious reaction to the action that they've put in motion for the past few decades. As you say, it's the pendulum swing. It's not only perfectly predictable, but I'm sure perfectly predicted and part, no doubt, of the ultimate orienting of society towards the coming war that we're going to get all ramped up about. And I've already started to see happening. Oh my God, those Chinese, the Chinese are behind everything. We have to kill them. And, you know, we can't do that with a bunch of girly men. So we're going to get, and no doubt the pendulum will swing back the other way. And
what do you
the
think?
Real
of
manly men will stick up for human freedom.
What do you think? Iran,
Chinese people.
Iran.
Yeah, or Iran. Or
no. Russia. I mean, Iran, they bombed them and, you know, screw you, USA, and we're going to whatever and so on, that they did that. Yeah. What did you think of that? What did you go, whoa, that was balls? I mean, what were you thinking?
Right. So I just recorded New World Next Week where we talk about this. But basically, my long and short of it is this, at the very best possible reading, this is the way for people to, for everyone to save face. The Iranians have given everyone an ability to save face and say, look, okay, so we told you ahead of time we're going to do this thing. You all got prepared for it. You shot down 99.9% of the missiles or whatever. We save a face with our people. Look, we responded with force, and you get to save face. Hey, look, we've got this wonderful defense system, and everyone can just walk away from this. So there is the possibility that this won't escalate. And that, I think, is the best possibility that we could hope for. Whether or not people will take that. I mean, I guess it depends on whether or not the people who finance every war want to bring us into another.
Do you think that whole thing, that entire scenario, all right, you're going to do this, we're going to do this, we're going to do, and everybody make nice, you know, that wasn't all organized before?
Either way, it's the same result. I mean, I don't know what level of coordination that takes or doesn't take, but it ends up in the same place.
We'll get missiles out of Turkey.
Right. Yeah. Right.
You know,
speaking of Cold Wars. Yeah.
So, I'm so likelihood we're going to have a escalation in war, even if it's not Iran. I mean, are you seeing that?
Oh,
are we going to get a mushroom cloud?
It's coming in the course of this decade, I think. That's if I have to pull out my crystal ball, I'm thinking we're definitely heading back into times where Americans and other spoiled Westerners who haven't seen that kind of military combat in their lifetime are going to see it playing out, and that's
with a mushroom cloud. I just want to know, is there going to be a mushroom cloud?
You know, it could take different forms, but yes, something equivalent of that. See, we're talking in World War II narratives about mushroom clouds and what have you. No, this is World War III, so it might be the mushroom cloud might be a drone swarm or whatever that assassinates everyone in Congress, you know, over in the blink of an eye, or whatever it is. Who knows?
Wow, somebody's out there screaming if. Wanting to know if they need a map. That wouldn't be me. I wouldn't do that.
You know? No. No, but there was even that video they made several years about.
Slaughterbots.
Slaughterbots. Yeah.
Slaughterbots. I remember that. Well, thanks, James. There's a lot going on, you know, and a lot of perspective. Talking to a lot of people, I'm seeing a shift. And it's a big shift. And James Corbett, the CorbettReport.com, the documentaries there, go to opensourceeducation.online has package there of gives you great content, opensourceeducation.online, and it gives you a great package of context so you understand what's happening. That's why it's so important. Thanks a lot, James. I'll see you next time. Peace.
Absolutely. Take care.